Welcome to Off the Cut, a podcast where we talk about building, making,
and answering all of your questions.
I'm Eric from Spensley Design Co.
And I'm Zach from Zach Builds. If you have a question that you would like us to answer on air, you can send it to offthecutpodcast@gmail.com.
You can find both of us on YouTube, Instagram, and unfortunately, because we have to keep up with kids, you can find us on TikTok too.
All right, now let's get into the show.
You've just entered Off the Cut episode 94. We're up in Toronto and here in Ohio. Today is known as Thursday, December 14th, 2023, which means the Green Suitors podcast, the worst woodworking podcast in our space, available on Apple and Spotify, still sucks.
Oh, thanks for that update. I really needed that.
I just wanted to make sure you knew that. But you know what doesn't suck, Zach?
Our patrons? Oh, well, no, KM Tools. Yeah, but, well, both. Okay, both of them don't suck, right?
Well, I mean, it depends.
Eric, why don't you tell the people at home what KM Tools is all about?
Well, KM Tools has a fine selection of everything you could possibly need for your making adventures, run by our good friend, Jonathan Katz-Moses. And his whole thing is, he thinks that woodworking should be accessible to everyone. The company was made by woodworkers for woodworkers.
Mm-hmm. And that means that everything in their store is either designed by Jonathan and his team, or it's something that they have in their shop.
And a portion of their profits go directly to the Katz-Moses Woodworkers with Disabilities Fund, which helps get tools and resources into the hands of those who need it most. Whew. That's good stuff.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. It's well, I mean, you worked with them directly. I guess I don't know if we want to tread this ground again, but it's such a nice thing that he's doing, and it makes a big difference in people's lives.
Yeah, and because he wants to make this, you know, not just an ad read, he wants to give back to the community as well. Every single month, we are giving away a $50 gift card.
Yeah. Through us.
Through us. He's using
us. We're just middlemen.
He's using our bodies. every single month, he is giving away a $50 gift card to KM Tools. And the only thing you have to do is go to patreon.com/offthecutpodcast and you're automatically entered to win. So Huge shout out to Jonathan and KM Tools for sponsoring the show and getting our listeners some free tools.
Heck yeah. Yeah. That's what it's all about.
Speaking of tools, is that, I thought I was going to go with the Patreon segue. I'm not going to.
Either he's going to talk about a new tool he got or he's going to call somebody a tool. Which way is this thing going to break?
No, we can talk about Jason Bent later. You know how I had vehemently despised miter saws? I was like, it's stupid. They're a waste of space. Nobody needs them.
Yeah, very controversial take that only you hold.
I don't think it's only me. I think it's me and like one other person maybe. Dude, I got my new miter saw yesterday and I've been, poking around with it. Dude, I gotta say, when you got a miter saw that works well, it is so nice to have because I like rip some wood. I'm like, wait, I can leave my fence here. And I don't have to move my fence, then grab my miter gauge. I can just turn around and like chop it. I was like, this is a game changer. This is a game changer.
I like how you're like 5 years into your woodworking journey and you're just discovering how useful a miter saw can be.
I know. So, in all fairness, I've never had I've had a miter saw, but I've never.
Let's go through your history of miter saws, right?
So I had like an $80 Ryobi one.
Yes.
That's my first problem.
Was that like a full 10 inch or was that one of those weird 7.5 inch blades?
No, it was a 10 inch. It was a tenner.
Okay. Yeah. Good boy saw.
Yeah. But I never had, like, if I wanted to use it, I would just pop it out like on like the concrete or like on a card table. And then if I wanted to support wood, I'd throw like a couple 2x4s underneath it. So yeah, like I never had any sort of like stop block or any support or anything like that. So I was like, well, this is just a pain in the ass. Yeah. And then you go to make a cut and the miter saw would like slide across the card table. I was like, yeah, I'm not doing this. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so then I was like, I'm getting rid of this. I ended up selling it to one of my buddies. I convinced him it was more expensive than it actually was. So I actually made money on that one.
Ooh.
Yeah.
One of your friends?
He is a moron. He's a good guy, though. He's the best man in my wedding, actually.
Oh, really? Does he know that you profited on that trade?
I doubt it. He wouldn't listen to this. So I got rid of that. And then I got that rigid, like, articulating arm slider thing that's kind of like the Bosch Glide that you have.
Yeah, is it the rigid one? It's also sold under Delta as well, I think.
It's the same saw, it's just different color.
Different color. Okay, yeah. It's got like two folding arms on either side.
Yeah.
But somehow manages to be less stable than the Bosch that has just one arm.
Right, right. It is awful. I have a video of that on my YouTube channel. So if you touch it at all, like it deflects like a good eighth inch side to side. Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah.
So then I was like, well, I mean, I could. That's it's a powerful saw, but it's super inaccurate. So I was like, I'll just throw that up in the rafters, and then if I like build a deck or like, you know, do construction, sure. I was like, that'd be one you could just throw whatever you want at that thing, and like, I don't care, right? If it gets beat to hell.
Yeah.
So then after that, I was like, well, I mean, but that's still like a $500-$600 miter saw. Like, what the hell? And I, in all fairness, hadn't tried some of the other ones out there, and then the Festool was nice enough. They're like, hey, we want to do some promotion stuff. Like, we're going to send you the new cordless Capex. And I'm thinking like, oh, I don't know. But they sent it to me, and they also, which I didn't know, they sent this like folding stand thingy. So you can like fold it down, like wheel it around. And then it's got like the aluminum extension wings with stop blocks and all kinds of stuff like that.
You're
I set that up and I was like, okay, I get what all the hubbub is about with the miter saw now. Now that like I can like set up a board that's like, you know, 5, 6, 7 feet long.
Yeah.
Fully supported, and I just cut it and go. I'm like, okay, I get it. I respectfully retract my statement that miter saws are useless.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I mean, would you also like to try the cheapest jigsaw and then write off all jigsaws entirely?
No, I had a cheap jigsaw. I actually had a $40 okay. Ryobi jigsaw that was it was great.
Okay, all right.
I've never had like everyone's like, oh, jigsaws are the worst. I've truly never had that experience.
Really?
Yeah.
I think jigsaw is an easy tool to screw up because blade deflection is such an issue. If you don't have the right blade on there, if you don't have the right blade angle, if you're pushing on it too hard, things go hairy real quick.
I think
that's why they have such a bad rep.
It's the easiest tool to mess up.
Yes. And it still seems like it's working because you're like, well, I'm still cutting. Like, I'm still moving through this material.
Right.
Whereas like once the blade starts to deflect.
Yeah, as soon as the blade deflects, you're done. Yeah. Forget it.
Yeah, you'll just never.
It doesn't come back.
Yeah. No. Because you're like, you know, I'm turning pretty sharp, and like it seems like it's okay, and all, and then all of a sudden the jigsaw is like, like jumping, like ripping your shoulder out, and by then that cut's been gone for a while.
Yeah.
Ugh. But see, a circular saw, like if you try to like, you know, push it sideways, it's going to give you some resistance, and you're going to be like, yeah, I'm not doing something right here. The jigsaw would just keep going.
Well, because it doesn't have the blade, is just like that. You have that tiny little contact area, and then you also have no, I guess, protection against rotation because the blade itself is so small.
Yeah.
With the circular saw, you know, you have leverage and you end up mashing against the side of your cut. And then, you know, if you don't have a good circular saw, it comes flying back in your face.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, see, that was actually the perk of when I started out. I had like this really, really underpowered Ryobi circular saw. And obviously I had no skill of using a circular saw, so I wasn't always pushing it forward. If you would bind that thing, it just turned off.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It was a great safety feature.
Yeah.
Unintentional.
Just overload the motor and instantly turn off.
It was a battery powered one. It'd just be like,
Yeah, I'm not doing this anymore.
Right. Right.
Yeah, they have like, there are circular saws out there that will detect if it's binding up and then shut off as a protection feature. But this is not what you're describing. You're just describing a weak motor.
Yeah. Wait, wasn't there one of those science YouTuber guys? It wasn't Mark Rober.
No, it was Smarter Every Day, I think.
Yeah. That made like a circular saw that if it sensed kickback, it would instantly cut it off.
Yeah. And I think maybe I'm mixing this up, but I think a company did take that and actually implement it in a saw.
Maybe.
Let's see.
I think one of Festool's track saws has it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
It's basically like the riving knife that just gets kind of like pushed up in it. And then if the saw lifts up, the riving knife basically like comes down. And if it senses the riving knife comes off of, so it's basically like, think of it as like a spring-loaded button, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's constantly trying to push down on the track. And if the saw were to come up, then the button comes down. And as soon as the button's disengaged, it senses its kickback, basically.
That's smart. That's a good way to do it.
Yeah.
Huh. I wonder if you could do something like that with a circular saw, too, where it's sensing if the saw is flat on the material or not. You could just have like a hole in the base plate or something.
What do you think the most dangerous thing about a circular saw is? Kickback?
Setting it down. Setting it down wrong.
Yeah, setting it down wrong. That's a big one. Also,
What? Why? Explain this to me. I genuinely have no idea what you're talking about.
If the blade is still spinning when you set it down, it could either run across whatever you set it down on, or you could turtle it, but then that blade's still running, and you could still put your hand on it or something.
Yeah.
But that's what the little guard thingy's for.
Yeah.
I mean, in theory, yes, but I've run into a number of situations where the guard gets jammed up with wood or for whatever reason it stays back or it doesn't come all the way forward. And
my Milwaukee circular saw has a brake on it. So as soon as I let it off, it goes.
Yeah.
That's like a more high-end feature.
Yeah. Oh,
just to prevent all that.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Huh. See, now this makes me want to dive into like every tool and be like, if you were to redesign every tool, how would you make everything safer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think brakes are one of
Might make a good episode.
Yeah, true. I think brakes are one of the biggest things for almost every tool, like even the router, right?
Yeah.
You know, if that bit stops spinning right away, like have you ever had a router that just keeps spinning after you turn it off? You're always like, what the hell do I do with this thing? Because most of them are not built in a way so that you can put them. Well, now a lot of them are, but a lot of the old ones aren't built in a way so that you can put them straight up with the bit facing towards the ceiling. And even if it is, it's like you still have like a little small contact area. And it's like that thing could be spinning.
Exposed spinning bit.
Yeah, 30 seconds after you turn it off, and it's like, oh, better not bump the table while that thing's still spinning. Yeah.
Well, we have all got the DeWalt trim router, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That one does go for a good few seconds after.
Yeah.
It's got a break, though, right?
It's like a couple seconds afterwards break usually engages.
But I get what you mean. It's like you're using it, then you flip it over, and then that's usually when you turn it off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I have little routers where once you turn it off, the bit is still spinning for 15 seconds.
My old Ryobi was like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure all of my, you know, like 2 horsepower routers or whatever, you know, like the handheld ones, not handheld, but you know what I mean? Like freestanding ones. I'm sure those take forever. I know my router table motor takes an eternity to turn off.
Yeah,
like no joke, probably 20 seconds.
Yeah, so I'm trying to think what other. Yeah, I mean, again, if you have a miter saw that doesn't have a brake on it.
Yeah,
that's a dangerous tool, especially, you know, you're reaching in there, you cut something, the blade, you take your finger off the gas, for lack of a better word.
Sure.
Blade's still spinning. You reach in to get your wood, you know. The guard.
That's what she says. That's
what she said. We're so immature.
That guard might be, the guard might come down, but there's still like a good 3-4 inches of exposed blade that the guard doesn't really protect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of some other scary tools. Jigsaw's nice, always stops. Have you ever tried to, my friend showed me this the other day, that you can take an oscillating multi-tool with and just press it against your skin and it won't cut you.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
I had no idea.
Like with a blade on it?
With a blade on it. I think if you push like really hard, yeah. Maybe. But yeah. If you just do light pressure, resting, it won't cut. Yeah. Because it just goes back and forth, I guess.
Yeah, as long as your skin isn't taut.
Yeah.
If your skin is loose.
If you were to put it on like the webbing of your fingers, I'm sure it would cut right through that. But yeah. If you like press it into your forearm just very lightly, it won't cut.
Because it's moving back and forth on such a small area.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, that would be a good thing if you're doing a tool review for like new multi-tool blades and like start buzzing it against your arm because you won't even, it's not even sharp enough to cut me.
Does any tool burn through blades faster than the oscillating multi-tool?
A cheap table saw.
Cheap table saw. Ooh. Cheap table saw.
Scared the crap out of me.
Yeah.
Like a job site saw being turned on. Cause like,
my old Ryobi, every time I fired it up, the whole thing would jump about a half an inch in the air.
No way. Because
it kicked on so hard.
Wow. Yeah. Damn.
I mean, that was how my rigid the job site saw that I had was.
Oh, yeah.
It was awful. And then one day the motor actually did fall out of it. You remember that story?
Yeah. Some tools have like a soft start feature where it actually spins up slowly, which I'm sometimes a fan of and sometimes not. It's kind of annoying if you're trying to make a real quick cut and you have to wait 3 seconds for the saw to, you know, get up to speed in order to make the cut.
I like it.
Yeah. It is
in
a good
general, feature. I like it.
And you don't get that, like, you don't get that torque kickback.
Yeah.
So sometimes that can, you know, if you have the saw perfectly aligned with like a mark on a piece of wood or something like that, and then you start it up and you immediately get this kickback, you can lose where you had the blade.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's annoying because it's a little slow.
Yeah. A lot of tools out there. But what have you been working on? Anything exciting? I saw you put out a new YouTube video a day or two ago.
I put out my PlayStation video a couple
weeks. That one's doing well.
I saw it was 100 and something.
Yeah, it was 101 when I first checked. I haven't checked in a little while. My YouTube studio is a little glitchy lately, so it hasn't been showing where it is in the hierarchy. But I think it's doing pretty well. The sponsor I have for that video is a CPM deal with no cap. So it's like kind of a low CPM. I
hope it hits like the N64 one.
Yeah. So if it hits like the N64 one does, I'll be in for a nice payday, but if it, you know, just kind of does average, then it won't be the best payday, but whatever, you know, you got to take chances sometimes.
But so like what view count are you going to be like, okay, I'm happy with it for as far as like, you know, with the CPM deal to get it to where you would typically want a sponsor to pay, are we talking like 200,000 views, 500,000?
I think somewhere between those two numbers. I think 300,000, I'd be like, okay, like I'm pretty happy with that.
Okay. And so for our listeners who have no idea what that means, explain to them.
Yeah. So basically a lot of sponsorships will just pay you a flat dollar amount. They'll say, you know, we want to sponsor your video. We'll give you $1,000.
Sure.
Good to go. The deal that I took, they are going to pay me X amount of dollars for every 1,000 views that I get on the video. Mm-hmm. So the more views I get, the more money I make.
Yeah.
So, and it's a little bit risky because if a video bombs, then you don't get any money.
Right.
Which is, you know, a very real possibility, as we all know. Any YouTube content creator out there knows that every video is not a sure thing, right?
Right.
So you have to be pretty confident about the video you put it on. But the upside is, if I get a video with 1 million views, well, then I'm going to get way more money than I ever would have got from a fixed rate contract.
Right. So, and the whole reason brands do that is they're basically just trying to limit their exposure, right?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. They don't want to pay you $10,000 for a video that bombs.
Right.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they don't want to pay you $1,000 for a video that bombs. They're just trying to avoid that. So, you know, generally as a content creator, the more consistent you are, the less likely brands are to offer you this. But because this video was coming out so close to the end of the year, most shops have, like, you know, they spent their budget for the year, or most brands have spent their budget for the year.
Right.
They're kind of winding down. This is the last 3 weeks of the year. Maybe things will pick up again in the new year, but there wasn't much out there. And this sponsor was incredibly easy to work with. I filmed the integration, put it on the video. From signing the contract to having the video live was like 36 hours or something like that. Like, it was super
the
fast.
The best.
And very nice, very easy to work with. They only wanted a 30-second ad read, which I really liked.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hell yeah. Well, I'm glad it's going well. So that was the PlayStation one, the modern PlayStation 2?
Exactly. Yeah. So now I'm working on the follow-up, which is going to be a modern Dreamcast. We're going to do the electroplating. I haven't done much to it, honestly, because I was away all weekend. I was just kind of catching up on stuff.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you had any breakthroughs with the electroplating.
No, not yet. I honestly haven't even tried yet. So it was kind of... All the equipment arrived before I left for vacation. And the last day or two, I've just been kind of easing myself back into the everyday workflow.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Where'd you end up going on vacation?
I went to London, England.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it was pretty cool, man. The architecture there is awesome. For anybody who's likes buildings and likes, I don't know, urban planning and all these things, it was a really interesting city to go visit. I went to St. Paul's Cathedral, which is this giant cathedral right in the center of London. Like, I don't know, I'm going to mess this up, but let's say it's 400 years old. Huh. It was quite possibly the biggest single room that I have ever been in. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I was going to say I'd show some pictures for the live stream crew, but I guess I can't. But just, I don't know, it was really wild walking up these, like, carved... Oh, yeah, Derek's on it. Nice. Walking up these carved marble stairs that were 400 years old, and they had like half-inch ruts carved into them just by the amount of people that had gone up them through the years. Yeah, did that.
Really?
Yeah, look at, like, that was. I guess it's kind of hard to get the scale from some of these photos.
But it's like seeing the Grand Canyon in a photo. It's like, it's not the same as seeing in person.
Exactly. And it's all this, all this intricate, like, hand-carved oak work there. It was really beautiful.
Was that your favorite thing? Do you have a highlight of the trip? Any funny stories?
I don't think I have any.
Pretty laid back.
Yeah, just pretty laid back. Soph and I did a ton of walking. So the first day was kind of rainy, so we just went to like a few key spots that she wanted to hit, which was like restaurants and a couple little shopping areas that she wanted to check out. Then on Monday, we went hard tourist mode, and we did all of the major tourist spots in a single day. We walked over 40,000 steps in a single day. So we saw the Tower of London, we saw London Tower Bridge, we saw Big Ben, we saw Buckingham Palace, we saw St. Paul's Cathedral, we saw the Shard, we saw Shakespeare's Dome, the Millennium Bridge, and Borough Market, which are, like, you know, just kind of your main things you want to do in downtown London. So, yeah. I was also really impressed by the scale of London. It's probably the biggest city I've ever been to, which
really?
I was surprised by. Yeah, and I've been to New York, and so it felt bigger to me than New York did.
Okay. I mean, and New York feels pretty big.
Yeah.
It was just the two you guys went? You go with friends?
Yeah, I actually met up with a friend of mine. We only got to hang out for a few hours, but he lived there from probably, like, probably going to butcher this, but age 25 to 32 or something like that. So I met up with him for a little bit, and he showed me around some of the neighborhoods he used to hang out in.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
So would you recommend people go, or are you like,
No, 100%. Yeah. If you get the opportunity to go, you got to go. It's
okay. I feel like I've heard good things about it.
I've kind of been like a little bit of a Europe hater over the years. Like, it's not, I understand that it's beautiful and the cities are great and the culture is great, all that stuff. But I've always been turned off from going to Europe because I thought it was expensive.
Okay. And yeah, I did too.
I'm a little bit of a value shopper when I plan a vacation. I like to go to countries where my money will go far. And even though it was pretty expensive, it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. And it was worth it in the end, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Which vacation had the most bang for the buck?
Oh, Vietnam, 100%.
Was it Vietnam?
Yeah, Vietnam, I've heard good things about Vietnam. They're like, you can pay like $20 a night and get like a 5-star hotel.
Yeah, 100%. And you can go out. You can go out to like a beautiful restaurant and have the meal of your life, and your bill at the end of it will be like $8.
That's crazy.
Is getting there
tough or?
The flight to Vietnam kind of sucks. The last time I did it, it was, I think I was in the air for like 16 hours total. Cause there's very rarely any direct flights.
Right.
So that part of it's pretty rough, but yeah, you know.
But overall, it's a good time. Enjoyed it.
Overall, it's a great time.
Still recovering from the jet lag?
The jet lag was a little weird because we left Toronto at like 9 p.m. And it's a 6-hour flight, 7-hour flight, something like that. And then we landed at 10 a.m. in the morning in London. So
you add 5 hours or something?
Yeah, exactly. You add 5 hours. So I tried to sleep on the plane, but I'm not very good at sleeping on the plane.
No.
So I got like, you know, like 2 hours of sleep between Friday and Saturday, and then tried to do like a whole day of sightseeing on the other side.
I don't know how people sleep on planes, especially with our size. Mm-hmm. Like, I can barely fit in the plane seat alone.
Exactly. The smaller you are, I think the easier it gets.
Yeah, because I can't like curl up into anything. Like,
I
have to just sit straight up.
Yeah. And you can't do anything with your legs. Like, yeah.
No.
Yeah, it's rough. But, you know, have a couple beers, you try and make the best of it that you can, but yeah, it's rough.
I'm not looking forward to flying. I actually, I finally got my plane ticket for WorkbenchCon in Atlanta.
Nice. I actually got mine a while ago. Maybe we'll talk after the show about arrival times, just make sure we're all still on the same page.
Yeah, I think we all get in within like an hour or two of one another. So we can just meet up and then we can drive all the way over there. So hopefully, patrons, if you're listening, we have a special code for you. If you go to workbenchcon.com and you buy your ticket, you can buy it full price and we will be there. I had considered reaching out to WorkbenchCon staff to try to get like a discount code, but I heard other people do it and said it was just an absolute nightmare. So like, it's not even worth my time.
WorkbenchCon is a great experience and I love going. But the people who run it seem like they kind of suck.
How do I say this politely? I'm not going to comment on the people who run it, but I will comment on the fact that it's not run super smoothly.
Yeah, that's fair. Maybe I'm sure the people who are running it have the best intentions, but it never seems to run all that well. And I've heard, I have a little bit inside knowledge of somebody who's working there this year, and they say it's a bit of a S show.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can only imagine. But we'll be there. Confirmed. We all have tickets. Sure. Did you guys get your flights as well?
Yep.
Okay. So we all got our flights. We will be there, baby. I know the losers from the Green Suitors podcast will also be there.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, come hang out with us. We'll be there. How many days is it away? Do we know? It's like 2 months?
Away? Something? It's last end week of
February?
Yeah, last week.
70 days? 77 days, I think.
Counting them down on the the calendar. We should get advent calendars made for Workbench Con.
we'll do something funny for Workbench Con. Maybe we can bring a pinata or cornhole boards. Bring cornhole boards in the lobby. How quickly do you think you that could shut down?
If you were a stalker for some woodworking YouTuber, great way to like corner them and kidnap them finally.
You know what I was thinking? Like if you just showed up there and you didn't have a ticket, mm-hmm. no one would be any the wiser to know.
Oh man, we should have faked our tickets.
I know.
It's just like I should have just kept mine from last year and reused it.
No, but how many people actually walked around with like their badges and stuff?
Almost nobody.
Right.
Huh. Yeah. You're telling me this now.
There is no security. At no point did anybody be like, hey, can I see your pass?
No. And especially like if other people there know who you are. People are just going to assume that you're, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, they'll be like, oh, it's Eric Spensley. Of course, like, you know, of course he's here. It makes sense.
Yeah, but like, so last year, Steve Ramsey was there. Like, if Steve Ramsey walks in, no one's going to be like, dude, you got a ticket? Like,
exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, but if it's like,
even if you didn't have a ticket.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Nobody knows. But if you have like some random guy that nobody's ever heard of walking around, they might like maybe look at that. I don't know.
Maybe. Even there's like events where you get tickets for drinks and stuff like that. Nobody has to see my badge.
No.
I think next year we see if we can crash Workbench Con and just sneak in.
See how many drinks we can get.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing is you can just hang out in the lobby and nobody whatever. No.
Yeah. I'm going to let all the listeners in on a little secret. Workbench Con is not about the classes.
No.
It's about the conversations that you have outside the classes with all the other creators.
Right. It's literally just a giant open room where there'll be circles of you know, 5 to 10 people. And the cool thing is anyone, like you just walk up to a circle and just like, start listening to the conversation and no one cares. Like if you have something valuable to add, people will invite you into the conversation. I think that's the really cool thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Same with lunch. You just like find an open, like, you know, if Zach and I walk to lunch and we're like, hey, there are two seats open there. Like, I don't know any of these people. You want to sit down and just chat with them. Like we had some pretty cool conversations.
That was the first time I ever met Vic and Dom was at Workbench Con. There was just like an open seat at their table. And I asked if I could sit down with them, have a chat, and yeah, became fast friends.
We still need to invite them on the podcast.
I know you did their show, so it's only fair that they come on and do ours.
I know. Should we have both of them on, or should we just do one and then another one at another time?
Maybe we'll do them both separately.
I think that could be fun.
Yeah, I think that could be fun too.
But back to back.
Back to back, yeah.
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 Well, okay. I'm going to add that to my list now. I'm going to reach out to them. Okay. Oof. That's enough Workbench Con talk. let's see. Well, we got to thank our returning top tier patrons.
Sure do.
First, I have to give a huge shout out. Excuse me. To Dan Armendariz. I can't pronounce people's name. He upgraded to be a top tier patron.
Maybe.
Yeah. Right? I'm trying to get more entries to get that Cam Tools gift card.
True. It's going to pay off.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I have too much sparkling water. We've also got Luke Schmidt, Chris from Black Forest Creations, Josh at Freedom Workshop, Dadu, and Corey Duvall. So those are just some of the patrons, and we appreciate all of you that are supporting the show, making this whole thing possible. As being one of those patrons, you get access to the Patreon live hangout, which we are excited to announce is Tuesday, December 19th.
That's right.
So it's next week.
Bring your jingle bells because it's going to be festive.
Oh yeah. I'm excited to see what people have got going on for the Christmas season. Did I send out a thing on Patreon for that? I'm pretty sure I did. I think I sent a calendar invite for it as well.
Let me check.
Yeah. I definitely got the invite. Sure.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Off the Cut Podcast BYOC. I scheduled it for 8:15 Eastern. Okay. Whew. We're excited for that. So if you want to support the show, you can go over to patreon.com/offthecutpodcast. You get access to the after show, which is a whole nother podcast that we do every week. You can get enter to win that Cam Tools gift card every single month. Mm-hmm. Get access to the Discord. You get access to the video chats that we do once a month with everyone. All kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Whew. Good times. Mm-hmm. So what have you been working on? Let me turn your question around on you. Haha. Okay.
Well, the saga of the website is 99% done. It is designed. It is fully functional, ready to go.
Okay.
And then they're like, okay, well, the last thing you have to do is just transfer your domain. So now when people go to SpencerDesignCo.com, instead of them going to my old website, it'll take them to my new one. So I was like, great, yeah, let's transfer it. And they go, well, there's some more back-end admin stuff. I was like, oh, God. So I have to transfer my domain, which I have to put in a request to transfer it, which takes like 1 to 2 weeks. Then it has to get transferred, and then I have to enter all these authentication codes and all this other nonsense. I know it's for security, so somebody just doesn't swipe my domain and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's just such a buzzkill. Like, I was like ready to launch. I was like, okay, here we go. I'm going to put it out. Nothing.
That sucks. I thought you were going to say for a second that Squarespace registered your domain for you, and then they were going to hold the domain ransom because you were transferring.
I did it. I when I got the website, I paid for the website through Squarespace. Mm-hmm. And then also, because I had no idea what I was doing, I was like, I'll just do the domain through Squarespace as well. Well, I don't want anything to do with Squarespace anymore. So I'm transferring it to GoDaddy. So it's just like an independent, you know, domain provider everybody's heard of, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I got to transfer it to them. And then once it's in my GoDaddy account, it's processing right now, like pending. Then I can link my Shopify store to that domain.
Sounds like fun.
I cannot wait to be done with it because I've been so focused on this that I haven't really been focused on like building a bunch of stuff recently. But then once this is done, I'll be like, great. I don't have to send like all of my time towards towards tech stuff. I can get back to doing what I actually want to be doing, which is building stuff.
So
finishing the chessboard.
The chessboard's done. I gave it to my buddy for Christmas.
I think Derek, he showed us the finished chessboard on the week when you're on vacation.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. It looks nice. Buddy loved it, so that's good. Who knows when that video will come out? I don't know.
Years from now, probably.
Yeah, but so that the website saga is almost done. I think it looks great. I think it's real streamlined. I let some people who know nothing about like websites or whatever. I go, hey, go on this website. They're like, they obviously knew it was mine. I was like, give me feedback. Mm-hmm. They're like, this is really weird. So one of the feedback things that was really nice, because I sent it to you guys as well.
Yeah.
I appreciate your feedback, by the way. Yeah. I think I've implemented every change that you guys gave me.
Oh, nice.
One of the things, I gave it to Miranda. I go, look at this. And she goes, did I already click on something? I was like, what do you mean? She goes, well, I just landed on it, and now I'm just hit with instantly shop. I was like, yeah, I mean, that's what I want people to do. She goes, well, it just feels very invasive that I get on your website and you're instantly just going shop. She's like, it doesn't seem very inviting. And I was like, you're totally right. What other website do you go on and instantly it's just like ready to go?
She's like, Amazon.
Amazon. She's like, put a little like banner at the top or whatever. So now you log on and it's kind of like a quick video of like showing me cutting something, and then I like shows a finished project, and then shows me like talking, and then like, you know, a bunch of like 1 to 2 second clips that has like a small gradient over. So it's basically like a background video. It's like way more inviting now.
That's cool. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Soften it a little bit, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
It's, hey, welcome to my website. Give me your money. As opposed to just give me your money. No, but I'm so glad to be almost over with that. I just...
Do you have...
It's a nightmare.
Well, okay, so two thoughts. One, these admin-y things that seem... You're like, it's a big taking to revamp your entire website.
Right.
But you were like, oh, I'm going to farm it out. I'm going to have this other company do it. Even just managing that is, you know, a week long process. And it takes away. Yeah. And it takes away from doing the main part of the business. So I'm always really reluctant to do these little like side adventure, side project things.
I know. So what are these other think of overhauling my website, redoing my website. What's something that you have in your queue that you're like, oh, I really would like to, or really feel like I need to get this done, but you keep pushing off?
Well, Dadu knows what I'm about to say, but that's redoing my own website.
Yeah, your own website. He's helping you out with that, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. But I mean, I've just completely fallen off with it because I've been so damn busy making videos. I've been barely able to keep up, and I haven't even been posting that often. But the projects I'm doing now are just getting more and more complex and requiring more and more time.
I know.
So I'm hoping I can get a little bit of a break in the new year, because I do have one finished video where I'm just waiting for a sponsor for it before I release it. So I'm hoping that buys me a little bit of time.
And this is the time, if you're going to double down on videos, this is the time, because views go way up in the winter.
Yes.
Same with ad revenue.
I noticed actually a lot of my favorite creators must have saved up a bunch of videos and released. Oh, yeah. Have you looked at Mark Rober lately? He released more videos in December than he's released throughout the rest of the year.
That makes sense.
I mean, yeah, totally. It's like, it's a great strategic move, especially if you can have 4 to 5 mega viral videos at the same time and they're all kind of feeding into each other.
Well, he's also launching out that box thing he's got. And then he's got a bunch of stuff that he's launching. I've seen him on the news, morning shows and stuff, doing the rounds.
Yeah.
That's what gets me so jazzed about making my own product. But keep going, keep going.
But that's a great example of another thing that's the diversion from the main thing, which is making videos, right? Is anytime you try and do a product, you have all this time that's going to go into it. And that's just a digital product, let alone a physical one.
I know.
Yeah.
That's where I keep going. I'm like, okay, I really want to get into doing products, but I was like, okay, I can 3D print stuff. You know, we know tons of people that do it. Like Drew Witt has a huge business on 3D printed stuff.
Yep.
But I'm thinking I can't think of anything worse. Me personally, I'm not speaking for anybody else, than having to fulfill box and mail orders.
Yeah, we are very much on the same page there.
I would rather only get 20% of the revenue and have somebody else do it.
Yes, 100%. I think the only way I would ever do a physical product is if I could partner with somebody who does production, like JCATS. If I had a design for a tool or a jig or something like that, I'd have him make it to be like, just pay me a small royalty. I'll advertise it on my channel and we'll be good to go. Because I do not want to be boxing products and sending stuff out.
No. Or think about it you have a tool. How many emails are you going to get? Hey, this showed up and it was damaged, or it was scratched, or it doesn't work. Can I return it? That is not what I want to be focused on.
Yeah. I like digital products because as soon as somebody's X or Y was missing. Instant refund. Just, I want you to have a great experience. I don't really care about the $5 for the set of 3D print files or whatever.
You're not out any money.
Exactly. It's
I will always try to, if somebody has a question, I will answer the question, try to rectify it. But if they're like, hey, you know, this didn't work out for me, refund, done.
Yeah. Some guy messaged me. He was like, hey, one of these I sold like a bunch of 3D files all bundled together for my N64 build. And he was like, hey, yeah. And he was like, hey, there's one of the 3D models is missing from it. I was like, oh, sorry, man. My bad. I just forgot to include it in the zip. So I sent it to him separately, updated the zip. I was like, you know what? That's a bad experience for this guy. Here's a refund.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a nice gesture.
Yeah, it's nice. It's just good customer service. Again, it literally costs you nothing. So why not?
And I've had it, like, I've noticed people be like, I think this happened like once or twice, maybe. Somebody was like, hey, I noticed that there was a typo. You like, you wrote that it was supposed to be 8 inches, but it's definitely supposed to be 18 inches or something like that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, thanks so much. I was like, I refunded them, gave them a gift card to my website and like adjusted it. And there's like, I wasn't trying to get a refund. I was like, no, like you saved me a headache. Cause do you know how many other people were going to see this? Like, this gift card that I gave you, again, is for digital products, so it really cost me nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's making a good experience for you, and you're saving me a headache in the future of other people reaching out to me. Because mistakes are going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, this is completely tangential, but it's a question that I've had on the docket for a little while. And actually, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. Derek, you wrote some stuff down here about some, I think these were topics that we had briefly touched on in the past. Why don't you introduce some of these things, like the holiday give back thing. Remind me what that was. You said the holiday give back, leave a nice comment. What was that?
Oh, yeah. So I think I'm trying to pull up where you're at. Yeah, the holiday give back. So I know we talked about, going on to like Instagram or YouTube or something and finding a smaller creator and leaving nice comments for them for the holidays. Checking out what they're working on and leaving a good comment. Everybody should do that.
That stemmed from our conversation about people leaving nasty comments on small creators' pages, right? Yeah.
I thought if y'all wanted, we might be able to go on and do it live on the show or, have something prepared next time.
Ooh, yeah. Why don't we do... Yeah, let's do that next time on the show. We'll have like a little segment where we... Why don't we do this? We'll each find a small creator. Not only will we, give them a nice comment on their video, but we'll show their page a little bit on the podcast and talk about what we liked about it on the podcast. Maybe give them some subscribers or followers or whatever.
Should maybe limit it to Instagram videos or something then, so they're not too long.
Yeah. Good call.
Yeah. I don't know if we'll be, you mean like play it on the podcast or whatever?
Maybe. That might be an after show thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we would just be like, hey, I found this account, it was whatever, ABC123, I really enjoyed checking them out. They have 200 followers or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm also going to repost them to my story too. Give them some.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, good call. Post
to story. Okay. Yeah, so we'll come back next week and just talk about who we found.
It must be so cool to be like a YouTuber who has 10 million subscribers or, Instagram person who has 10 million followers, and you can just
overnight. Midas touch somebody.
Yeah, Midas touch somebody. Just be like, this person's awesome. And then, all of a sudden that person has 100,000 followers or something.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
I would, if my channel was that big, I would probably overuse that and then it would lose all meaning.
No, I don't blame you. Let's see. So I've been watching. This is what I want to ask you about, Zach. I've been watching a lot of like home reno content recently on YouTube because it's what's interesting to me, right? People demolish houses, like totally remodel them and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I've seen a lot of stuff about flooring and I want to ask you. Mm-hmm. So you have real hardwood flooring. You have like engineered hardwood flooring. You have LVP, which is the luxury vinyl plank. And then what's the other one?
Laminate.
Okay. Yeah. What floors? Give me the pros and cons of the flooring types.
Okay. So we'll start at the bottom. Laminate is cheap. It's cheerful. It's easy to install.
Okay.
It usually most laminate floors and LVP
high traffic.
Yeah, usually they'll click together.
Okay.
You don't need to nail them around the perimeter. They're just floating. They call them floating floors.
Yeah.
So that means that basically you leave about a half inch gap the whole way around the perimeter of the floor where it touches the wall. And then you just cover that with trim and your quarter round or your shoe molding.
Okay.
Downside to it is that it's not nearly as durable as any of the other floors.
Okay.
It's susceptible to things being dropped on it. It's going to wear out quicker in general because you usually only have, actually, sorry, I should say luxury vinyl plank. I hate that term so much. That stuff is actually crazy durable.
Okay.
But yeah. It's not real wood. It's just plastic printed to look like wood.
Right.
Right.
So you would take LVP over laminate.
I would take LVP over laminate every single day of the week. Yeah.
Okay.
If you're putting it in a wet area, that's what you want.
Yes, if you're gonna
if you're going in a kitchen or something, yeah,
entryway, something like that, yeah, definitely. So bottom of the barrel is your laminate flooring, cheap. It's not as durable. Then you step up to LVP. Again, very easy to install. Usually a floating floor system. The only downside to it is that it just doesn't really feel that much like a. Like a wood floor, like it's kind of easy to tell that you're walking on it. Like you're not walking on real wood, I should say. Right. And especially if you're installing it directly over concrete or something like that, it's going to take the same characteristics of the concrete. Like it's going to be very hard on your feet.
Yeah, that's how our floor in the apartment is. It's a concrete subfloor and it's LVP directly over the floor. And it is brutal to walk on with bare feet.
Yeah, yeah. You end up walking around your own house with slippers on or shoes on all the time just to protect your feet a little bit.
Yeah.
But the nice thing, again, is it's not susceptible to water damage. It's really durable. And, again, usually tends to be pretty cheap as well.
Okay.
Then to step up from that, it's between hardwood and engineered floors, it kind of comes down to preference. So the nice thing about an engineered floor is that you have a it feels like real wood, and for all intents and purposes, it is. You have about an eighth of an inch to maybe 3/16 of an inch of actual real wood bonded on top of a lamp, like a plywood almost.
Okay.
It's basically plywood.
Yeah, and then so those floors, engineered floors can... there's all sorts of different installation methods for them. I've done a lot lately where it's like a glue down. So you get like almost like a mastic glue that you spread out with a trowel and then you put the boards down into it. But I've also done engineered floors that click together and then float.
Okay.
The downsides to it, it's a little bit harder to install. It's more expensive usually. That's about it. I mean, it's, usually have enough material there that you could, if worst case scenario, if the floor does get damaged, you can sand it down and refinish it.
Okay.
Trying to think what else I should mention about. You are, because it's real wood and even plywood has a plywood core, you are susceptible to water damage as well.
Humidity as well.
Humidity as well. Yeah, again, just like the floating floors, you're not going to want to install it right to the wall. You're going to want to leave a gap the whole way around the perimeter to allow for expansion and contraction over time.
Okay.
I mean, really, that's every floor. You're going to want to leave a gap around the perimeter to allow
for expansion. Yeah, because all materials expand and contract when it's, 50 feet wide.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And then to round it out, actual genuine hardwood where it's a piece of wood the whole way through. Very nice feeling to walk on. You have medium-ish durability, depending on the type of wood that it is. But you have the ability to refinish it until the cows come home, right? You can refinish it every year if you wanted to, and you're never going to burn your whole way through the actual
material. Until you hit concrete.
So, yeah. The downside to real hardwood is that it's expensive and that it expands and contracts more than an engineered floor because it's actual wood. The plywood substrate of the engineered floor tends to control the expansion and contraction a little bit, okay. whereas the real
it keeps them from bowing.
Yeah, yeah. So if you in my house, the ground floor is a real hardwood floor, and there's all sorts of gaps between the each individual piece because the guys who installed it didn't do a very good job, and it expanded and contracted its way into the hell that it is now.
Okay.
Yeah. And yeah, installation is usually a little bit trickier too. A lot of hardwood floors you're nailing down. And that usually looks like using one of these cool, what's the tool
called? It's like one of those angle things, you bang it with a hammer, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's like an assisted thing. So you bang it really hard with a hammer, but then it's also hooked up to a compressor. And it, so it's like the hammer and pneumatic force working together to drive these big jagged nails into it. And usually a lot of the time you'll also glue at the same time.
Okay. So
yeah,
I want to separate this into three camps. Okay. One, money is irrelevant. You are your Jeff Bezos. What do you go for?
I would probably in my own house, if I had unlimited money, I'd probably just do a nice engineered floor.
Okay, so you'd pick engineered over
high end.
Yeah, like a high end one, something with a nice thick actual wood top. And the other nice thing about the engineered floors is that because it is a wood veneer, you can usually get much wider planks. Okay. So a lot of the stuff I've installed has been, 5-6 inch wide planks. Whereas if you go with an actual hardwood floor, usually two, three, four on the high end.
Okay. Yeah. So the next one is like, you just moved into a new home. You have a shoestring budget and you're like, I need to get a floor down. What are you going for?
Laminate.
I would probably step up to the LVP, assuming it's not over concrete.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's probably going to be a little bit more expensive than the laminate, but I've just had so many bad experiences with laminate floor going to hell because the slightest little bit of water got on it.
It just peels up.
Like in Sophie's old condo before we moved in together, the steam that would come out of the bottom of her dishwasher warped the laminate floor really badly under it. Yeah. I didn't
think about that.
And I've seen things like even just the water from people washing their dishes at the kitchen sink gets on the laminate floor and destroys it. So
like bubbles up and stuff.
Bubbles up or warps. And then it's one of these annoying things too, where as soon as it warps, it's supposed to click together, but it stops being able to. So you end up with these little lips between pieces.
And
you'll never the little clicky part is like an eighth of an inch. Like the whole thing is very small.
Exactly. It's not much material at all.
Okay. So yeah. I guess the middle of the road option would be like, okay, you move into a place. It's just like, okay, we have the money to renovate, but like, do we want to put it all into an engineered floor, or like, do I go maybe the, let's call it the everyday spender.
Yeah.
What would you recommend that person gets?
I would recommend an engineered floor. And the nice thing about engineered floors too, is that there's usually a range. Okay. Like there's really expensive ones and then there's stuff that's a little bit more affordable.
Okay.
So I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what the premium is versus like stepping from a laminate up to an engineered floor. You're probably going to pay about twice as much money.
Okay.
But you're going to end up with a much nicer product.
Right. So you would rather, if we say there's a good, better, best of LVP and a good, better, best of engineered, you would rather have a good engineered floor than the best LVP? Or would you rather have a... Yeah.
But that's,
I think it's like regional.
Yeah. It's definitely, and that's a little bit of my own bias being just somebody who likes real wood too. Sure. Right.
Ew.
Don't we all?
Yeah.
So are the guys at the Green Sewers podcast. Available
now. But again, if you're in Florida or somewhere super humid like that, then that's going to change the discussion. I live up in dry Canada, right?
Yeah. If it's super humid, you take LVP, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. More stable. Yeah. Makes sense.
Huh. Okay. We had we did our whole house in LVP, mm-hmm. Our last house, like about a year and a half before we sold it. We did the whole thing, bathrooms, kitchen, everything, and it was that Pergo LVP, which is like designed for wet areas and okay. pets and all this other stuff. That stuff was pretty nice. It held up really well. We didn't have any issues, and like we had two younger kids getting out of the bath just dripping wet. Like I said, it was in all the bathrooms and everything, steam, yeah. and never. We didn't have any issue with it at all, and it looked fantastic.
That's so a good point. Yeah. that you brought up was pets. Mm-hmm. The LVP will stand up much better than any other floor, too, especially if you have a big dog with, you know, big long nails.
Clickety clackety nails.
Yeah, exactly. Makes sense. The LVP is going to hold up a lot better.
So, Derek, what's the rough range of, like, you redid your entire home with LVP? Are we talking like 2,000, 5,000, 20,000?
Well, I can tell you it was a 2018. And it was a 1,500 square foot of flooring that we put down throughout the whole house. Ended up being about 12,000.
Okay.
This was the really nice.
Not a small chunk of change.
No.
And did that I mean, hardwood, that would probably be what?
That was installing like, it. We had the Home Depot guys do the install, so we didn't do any. We just had to leave for. Actually, you know what? It ended up being about 14,000 because we had to go rent a hotel for a week.
Okay.
I would so like LVP on the low side be about $1 a square foot.
Okay.
And then on the high side, probably like $5 a square foot.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to say ours was about $5 per square foot.
Yeah. So that was like the high end LVP flooring.
Yeah.
But like a hardwood floor, I'm sure you're talking about, you know, at least like $10 a square foot.
Yeah, and it just goes up from there. You know, if you want right. to do like a solid white oak floor, I mean, you're basically paying the same price that you pay to get it at the mill, right? But more because it's finished. It's, you know, it's all dimensioned down.
Right. Been all processed and stuff. Hmm.
Yeah. And then
it's got me thinking, man.
Engineered floor is kind of the middle ground, right? Like you could probably get a cheap engineered floor for like $6-7 a square foot,
right?
Maybe even a little cheaper than that, and then you know, and then you're getting up into $15-20 a square foot for the really high end stuff.
Makes sense. I think it's gonna be funny, you know, a year from now we're going to be on this podcast and be talking about all this home renovation stuff. And Zach's going to be like, oh my God, I'm trying to get away from this. I'm trying to quit my job.
Working on my Xbox console.
I'm making a modern Xbox 360 and be like, Zach, it's 2 years old. And he's like, it's outdated.
You know, it's funny. I've had so many people, I did the PS2 video and everybody's like, when are you going to do PS3? When are you going to do Xbox 360? I'm like, I don't know that there's like, yeah, like that. I'm going to give those ones a little bit of time to age.
Hey,
I can see the original Xbox.
Yeah.
I do want to do the original Xbox because there's some I've been doing research on it. There's fun stuff you can do there.
Yeah. I mean,
like the operating system was just Windows, wasn't it? Like it was a version of Windows, I think.
Yeah, I think you can hack pretty deep into it. And also because it was a PC, there are people who actually like swap the chips on the board
yeah. with
other PC components. So it's pretty interesting.
Huh. I mean, if yeah. people want to see it, you got to do it. You got to do it.
Do it, right?
Give people what they want.
Yeah. You know what we got to do right now?
Head to the after show.
Head to the after show, baby.
Gas up the jet skis and let's go.
Let's get her going. So if you guys want to join in the after show, just head over to patreon.com/offthecutpodcast. Sign up for any tier and you get access to the after show, baby. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of other stuff. You guys know what's over there. It's a good time.
Yeah, you guys know the deal.
Yeah. And remember, when you support us, you're not supporting the Green Suitors podcast.
Which available on Apple is the most important thing.
Yeah. No one
tis the season.
Them. Yeah. Tis the season to hate the Green Suitors podcast. Don't give them any money. They actually they poach whales.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
And throw babies downstairs. don't support those guys. Don't support them. Well, that's enough of them. Head over to the after show, get the jet skis going.
Let's do it.
All right, everybody. We will see you next week.